our first official Season 2 episode here on the Rogues Gallery. We've got plenty to talk about. Gotham is back. Arrow and the Flash right around the corner. Supergirl trailing not far behind. So here we go.
And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents the Rogues Gallery.
If you want to join the program, you can call our hotline 573-42-SCI-FI or send us an email, roguesgallery@scifi4me.com. Jason Hunt here in the bunker with Christopher Pryor.
Hello, everyone.
And joining via Ansible from various different parts around the globe, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Howdy.
And Christopher Jensen.
Thanks for joining.
And Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And if Tim and I sound a little bit deflated today... he and I were both out on a project over the weekend for MTV that had us out very late, past our bedtimes.
You naughty boys.
So we're going to let the rest of you do a lot more. And one of the things that we had talked about, I mentioned this being our first Season 2 regular, we're going to try to be on a little bit more of a regular schedule from here out, one, to help our audience grow, so people know when to expect a new episode. It's kind of been sporadic up until now, but also because there's going to be so much stuff to talk about, because we've got so many different shows that are on that are specifically DC-related, DC or Vertigo, because we've got, you know, we've got Gotham that's back already.
Mm-hmm.
We have Arrow and the Flash that premiere in a couple of weeks, not even a week and a half from now. iZombie's coming back. We've got Constantine going to show up in Arrow.
Yeah, one episode in Arrow.
One episode for now.
Yeah.
Legends of Tomorrow is going to be on mid-season.
That's in January.
And Lucifer... So yeah, quite a bit of DC related stuff. So we're going to have plenty of material to discuss. In addition to that, we've got some interesting legal developments.
Oh boy, I'm so excited to hear about the legal developments.
Well, and actually, it is a really interesting thing. Let's start there because, as many DC fans know, excuse me, when it comes to Batman, Bob Kane has been getting sole creative credit forever.
Right.
And recently, there has been a big push to get more credit for Bill Finger. And in some lesser degree, Jerry Robinson, but mostly Bill Finger. And the reason for that is because Bill Finger was largely responsible for a lot of the beginnings of the Batman mythology. Now, a few years ago, there was a book that came out called Bill the Wonder Boy. It was a biography by Mark Tyler Nobleman, and he's spent a great deal of time lobbying for DC and Warner Brothers to give Bill Finger his proper credit as a co-creator of the Batman stuff. And so recently, the announcement came out, and it was just really out of the blue. Nobody was expecting this, because the legal aspects of this, Bob Kane's estate, because Bob Kane is dead now.
Right.
Bob Kane's estate, the legal arrangement, in order for DC to continue using Batman, they give Bob Kane sole creative credit.
Yeah, you always see it like up there in the credits, like based on the character, created by Bob Kane.
Right. Now, this comes on the heels of the deal that Marvel made with Jack Kirby's estate, and they've got the deal now in place with Siegel and Schuster's estates regarding Superman. So some people figured it was only a matter of time, because it does feel like now the publishers are at the point, and fandom has been resoundingly loud over this for a number of years now, that the creators need to have some participation and credit and proper recognition and all of that, both in terms of the publicity side of things and the monetary side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill Finger, as of Gotham, is getting a credit of some sort. Now, when I saw Gotham, I saw a screener ahead of time, so I don't know if all of the credits were finalized. I didn't notice the Bill Finger credit because that when I saw the screener, it was before this announcement came on. So I'm assuming they probably changed the credits for air. And then when Batman vs. Superman comes out, Bill Finger will get a credit there.
Okay.
I think this is a great move. This is a great move on DC's part.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time coming.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of Batman himself, but I was not a huge DC Comics collector. So to me, this was a huge, like, out-of-the-blue announcement. I mean, I was not surprised that there was more people behind the creation of the character, but I definitely had not heard the story of Bill. And, you know, as a creator myself in different aspects, I've been in situations of joint, you know, creation. So I can definitely, you know, cheer, you know, a resounding sort of, you know, hell yeah, that they are doing something like this and giving this guy credit after so long.
Well, isn't that one of the reasons why Image was created, Image Comics?
Partly,
so
yeah.
There was a huge kind of push that of creator-owned, you know, creators so wanting to own their properties.
Intellectual properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Image began, who?
It was Rob Liefeld and Todd McFarlane.
Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, and there was one other guy. There was Liefeld and McFarlane.
Jim Lee.
Was Jim Lee part of that?
Yeah. He was the guy that gave it legitimacy, because otherwise it would be just the and the idiot just running away. Jim Lee was the family man. He was the rock. He was the steady working man.
Now, this programming note. Mr. Pryor has not been told that we are on FCC rules.
It's what they call them. It's what those two, Liefeld and McFarlane, are called. It's their nickname.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing too is you know, from the legal standpoint nowadays, not only do we have a lot more emphasis on the creator aspects of the ownerships and stuff, but there's a lot more opportunity for residual income from licensing. And, you know, this is not something that anybody came up with and thought about in 1961 when they came up with the Fantastic Four. This was a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody read it. And, you know,
it's for little kids,
14-year-old
kids.
This is on
the stand in the grocery store.
Exactly. And you know, of course, we go back to Star Wars 1977, changing everything, mm-hmm. and merchandising being one of those things. But I think as the industry has grown up, there's been a lot more recognition of the need for all of these different I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed. You know, Bill Finger responsible for a great deal of the Batman mythology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came up with
most of it.
Yeah. Co-created the Joker, created Batwoman, Catwoman, Commissioner Gordon, named Bruce Wayne, named Gotham City. I mean, Tim, I don't know if you have a list there in front of you. All sorts of things. The Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a list in front of me, but one of the critical things that he did also create was just the look of the character. If you've seen the original sketches that Kane did for Batman, it looks nothing like Batman.
Right.
I mean, Finger really just, he defined the characters in the modern way that we understand the character.
It's going to be interesting to see what this does to the whole Batman created by, because in Bob Kane's autobiography, he even acknowledged that Bill Finger should have gotten more credit than he did. So I'm wondering if DC has come up with some sort of an arrangement with Bob Kane's estate that, you know, they come in and they say, because a lot of this stuff, you know, Jim Lee's even said, you know, that they would have loved to give Finger credit a long time ago, but because of the restrictions in the Kane contract, they couldn't. So mm-hmm. this was one of those things where everybody knew what was going on, but everybody's hands were tied, and they couldn't make that deal. They couldn't put Bill Finger's name on anything because of the way the contract read on Kane's part. So I'm wondering if some sort of a deal has been struck there, where the Kane estate finally relented and maybe they're not quite so, you know, sticking the mud on the deal on their end.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure. I would imagine that if nothing else, the PR of it is negative for the Kane estate. And, you know, appearances have, you know, the appearances of things have power. So, and it's as acknowledged as it is, as known as it is, that Kramer did the work that he did. It's something that, you know, it would be in their professional best interest to come to a deal without probably a whole lot of fuss and bother.
Well, and I think too, though, because you and I talked about this regarding the credits on Doctor Who. One thing that I'd noticed at the end of the season premiere on Doctor Who, not only were the Daleks acknowledged as Terry Nation's creation, but all of the other, the Shadow Proclamation created by, and you know, all of these different, there were three or four different ones. The creator credits were there in Doctor Who. And, you know, now we've got the deal with Jack Kirby, and you look at all of the Warner Brothers animated stuff and the live-action TV shows and all of these, all of the characters are acknowledged, the creators are acknowledged.
Hmm.
You know, Cisco's creator and Felicity Smoke's creator and Vixen's creator. I mean, they're all starting to get credit. And I think Finger and Robinson are probably the last of the well-known ones who haven't gotten credit for anything yet.
So for Suicide Squad coming out, would that mean Paul Dini and Bruce Timm get use of Harley Quinn, like creator credits?
I would expect so, yeah. Because they came up with her.
Well, we're going to be keeping our eyes out for that then.
Definitely. Definitely. Also,
to help other fans on the fringe like myself, was Bill like an artist or a writer? Like, how did he help in the development?
Yes. Well,
artist both.
I think
he was the Most people know him as the artist on Batman. That's the common viewpoint. I mean, if you don't know much about the details of everything, then you go, you know, Bob, you know, Kane was the writer, Finger was the artist.
Okay.
And that's, you know, the whole point of this is the fact that is such a not exactly remotely accurate description. Because, yeah, I mean, really, he came up with so many of the story ideas and the writing, so.
Well, it's like Kirby. You know, he'd do all the sequential art and hand it over to Stan Lee, and then Stan Lee had to fill in the story and figure out what people were saying. It was a little backwards.
Mm.
But, yeah, the writers have always gotten a little bit more acknowledgement as the creative force, because, you know, the artists generally put together the pictures based on the words from the writer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in some cases you have a lot of the art counts as a creation aspect of things.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we saw with the legal fight over The Walking Dead. You know, somebody, you know, you took my property from me, says artist. It's nice to see that Finger's going to get the credit that he's due. It's a little late. It's a lot late, but
Seeing Bob Kane's name the very first time on a huge movie screen, kind of burned into my mind after watching Batman like 11 times in the theater. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. Well, it's going to be nice to see that. I'm still wondering, is Ditko getting credit for Spider-Man yet? Do we know?
You know, I don't know.
Sure. I expect to see Ditko's name on Civil War.
Hmm.
Because you know Marvel's going to do it right.
We hope.
Yeah. Speaking of doing it right, let's move to Gotham for a second.
Okay.
Because there's a question. Now, this is Tim and I talked a little bit about this on H2O. Let's expand on that. We're basically, we'll just talk about the first episode of the season here.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Jensen is writing the recaps for this season. I'm going to throw out my just real quick thing, and I'm just going to let you guys discuss. I thought it was a fairly solid episode. I think that within the context of the show, compared to other episodes, it was not bad. The caveat is that the show is bad anyway. But taking that into account, I thought this first episode coming out of the gate was pretty solid.
I do have to admit that I have seen a few other screeners as well, so my view is definitely a little bit colored. But I do have to disagree about it being a solid episode. For me, I've tried to be fair and give it some time to stretch out, but seeing a couple episodes in a row, I can't get set on the storytelling or the tone. I can't grasp where they're trying to go with this show. It feels too comedic on the villain side and sporadically gritty on the police side. I mean, does anybody else agree with me on this?
I definitely see what you're going with. The whole thing with, you know, what's his face with the blue mist, that was, I think you mentioned it was like something from the cartoons or in your recap.
Jerome.
Jerome Zardon. That's Jerome's a whole nother mess in and of himself. Is he the Joker? Isn't he the Joker? They won't seem to commit to it.
I've seen a fan theory on that.
Yeah.
I have an interesting tidbit on that when we get to the conference call.
The relationship between now Chris, stop me if I get into spoiler territory here, but the relationship between Crazy Barbara and Jerome.
Yeah.
I've seen some fan theories on that.
You're saying that it's similar to Harley Quinn?
Well, some people are speculating in this particular story universe,
mm-hmm.
because we've had a female Joker before, that maybe Crazy Barbara is the prototype Joker and Jerome is her Harley.
That's interesting. Oh.
That is interesting.
Okay.
I would have flipped it. I definitely saw tenets within the episodes that I would have put Barbara in the archetype of Harley for sure.
When you see the stand-in for the Joker looking over at this crazy blonde lady coming into Arkham, that definitely does ring of Harley.
Well, she's not trying to suck up to him.
Right.
He's sucking up to her. That's why people are saying that it's flipped. That, you know, she's the calm, in control, crazy one. And he's the loose cannon trying to impress her, which is kind of, you know, if you flip those, I mean, that's Joker and Harley. You know, Joker is the one that's so calm and collected and...
Well, calm as well, calm.
Relative to Harley.
I get what you're saying. That's interesting.
So, I don't know. I don't know.
Fan theories are fun.
Aaron Richards seems to have, you know, embraced the...
crazy
the direction they're going, so I don't know. We'll see.
Is anyone pointing out that are they officially committing to, like, is there a point where this show is supposed to be going? Are they still expecting this to meet up with some other version of the Batman mythology as we know it, or are they just going straight up Smallville alternate telling of the story?
It's going into the ground.
Yeah, it's pretty much Smallville would be a good reference. You know, it's on its own path.
They lost their best part, being Jim and Hart, and his partner teamed up. He works at a bar now.
Oh, right? Yeah. Are we really?
Spoilers.
No, not spoiler. I'm just so upset because Donald Logan. He's not gone. I hope not, because he's one of my favorite character actors of all time. American character actors.
He's still a regular on the show.
I hope so.
Of the cast. Did you guys see that Morena Baccarin is pregnant with Ben McKenzie's baby?
Yep.
Okay.
They're actually
romance on and off screen.
Off screen. Here's the thing. Funny story about Smallville.
Yeah.
Since we brought it up. The reason that we got Smallville,
because
we couldn't get Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, it was this.
They wanted to do Batman all the way back then,
instead we got the Chris Nolan Batman.
Right,
instead.
Exactly.
That's one of that.
Now, some other people have said if you look at Gotham as if it's Batman 66 Begins,
mm-hmm.
then this works.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I've been marathoning that all weekend. Batman 66.
It is. It is.
Well, the problem I have with that, because you've mentioned that before, and is that in no way, shape, or form, aside from being hit on the head and acquiring brain damage, is Jim Gordon on Gotham going to turn into Jim Gordon from Batman 66?
Not if you got Ben McKenzie, the man who has the charisma of a brick.
Yeah, well, I tell you, his performance is a little stiff.
Yeah, a little. And erratic at times.
Yeah,
like a brick to the head,
but you don't know why.
The whole show is just a misconceived disaster. And it's not.
You set up this universe within the Batman mythology, and you remove the central character of the mythology. You take Batman out of it, and what have you have left? You have everything else we didn't want to see happen.
Well,
we wanted to see the Penguin happen.
I think the
Penguin is a highlight.
Yeah.
I think the sad truth of this show is that they didn't know what they wanted to do in the first place. They don't know where they're going.
Clearly.
They had no full grasp on any of the characters, with the exception of the Penguin.
Yes.
And the problem is that they let themselves go the series without knowing what they were doing.
See, I don't know why they didn't just call Ed Brubaker and say, hey, let's do Gotham Central, because that's what everybody was expecting when they announced this thing to start with.
Man, that was even more depressing than just this. That was a depressing series.
Oh, I love Gotham. But see this, we already have, there is a market for procedurals, there's a market for Batman.
True.
Gotham Central, showing the you know, those folks actually working in the crazy world of the superhero, supervillain laden Gotham would have been fantastic. And you could go on as
except we would only ever be tempted with little bits and tastes of Batman, and we'd all be saying, why don't we have more Batman? He's the one who's solving everything.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, though, that was the central premise of Gotham Central. And everybody who read that book, or most of the people that read that book who were fans of that book, liked how that presented, because Batman, you know, he goes back to his roots as an urban legend, you know, a thing of the shadows. You don't really see him. He's there. His presence is there, but he's not there. And that's one of the reasons people think that book worked so well, is because, you know, his influence is in the stories, but you're dealing with the fallout and you're dealing with everything surrounding all of what's going on. And plus, you don't have to do origin stories for every single villain.
Yeah.
They're already established. Everybody knows who they are. Everybody knows the Penguin and the Joker and the Riddler and Catwoman and all this. You already have an established story universe. Plus, you've got great characters. You've got Renee Montoya. You've got was Bullock in Gotham Central? I can't remember.
Bullock, Christmas Allen. And the thing is that you have such an in with that show, is that all you have to do is have a character, whether from the comic book or not. It's their first day at Gotham Central.
Yep.
And there is your explanation for every explanation the show has to give. Anytime you sit there and say, and this is the Joker, he's a psychotic clown, prince of crime. And, you know, it's like, I heard of him. And you've got the whole spiel right there. And you can even do, because it's a procedural, you can do a crime of the week. You can build your long story arcs. It's just, it would have been so much happier.
If they had been able to capture that, it would have been fantastic, you know. But it's struggling at this point with story, obviously, in all fronts. I'm trying to give it credit as it moves into season two. And they're setting things up pretty well without going into spoilers for the arrival of Michael Chiklis. And I'm hopeful somehow that he might be able to bring a little bit of faith back to the show.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see about that. Because he's not coming on board as a regular yet. We do know that we're going to get more Lucius Fox this season.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. Hopefully, if we get Lucius Foss,
done the police thing before.
Right, right.
With
and he's also done the,
and the Shield.
Yeah, and he's also done the superhero thing before with No Ordinary Family and Fantastic Four. So he's bringing the street cred.
This show needs a lot more of the Shield in it.
Yes.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. It should be Law and Order Gotham.
Yeah, it really should.
Like 45 minutes more.
Yeah. Well, and in that regard, we should have Alan and Montoya. I mean, after they dropped out, halfway through season one and disappeared?
Yeah.
I think it was like three episodes.
Yeah, and the rest of the season, everybody's going, where's Alan and Montoya? Where's Major Crimes? You know, this should be a Major Crimes case. Wait, this should be a where?
No, just hand it over to Jim Gordon. Hand it over to Jim Gordon. Make Jim Gordon do it.
Where'd they go? You know,
cause tension for Jim. And then they were for a little bit, and then
they just
oh, never mind.
Yeah, they were throwaway characters, and you know that's one of the things. You go back to the Gotham Central thing. You know, Montoya was a very, very strong character, always has been.
And she becomes the Question.
Yeah, and that isn't going to happen. Not now.
Well, there's the question of where she is.
She is a question.
Yeah. Speaking of questions, there was another question.
Yeah, that's a nice segue.
Question as to whether or not Constantine will go past one episode on Arrow. And we will talk about that in addition to the return of The Flash and Supergirl, because I'm going to make a prediction now since we're talking about Gotham. Supergirl is going to kill Gotham. When Supergirl comes in on October 26th, the ratings are going to tank for Gotham. And if they don't move it off of Monday, then Gotham is done. The only way we're going to get season three out of Gotham is if they move it, and season three, they'll be on life support. I don't think they'll go past season three in any case. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I'm the same board, on the board with that.
All right, so we will talk Supergirl, Arrow, and The Flash, and Constantine, and all the other stuff when the Rogues Gallery continues right after this.
This is Sci-Fi Pony Radio.
Whoa, where'd you get that shirt?
Bought it at the convention last week. It's an Atomic Cotton design.
Atomic Cotton?
Yep, they got t-shirt designs from sci-fi, horror, cult films. All the shirts were really unique and fun. I had to get one.
I gotta wait for another convention, though.
Nope, AtomicCotton.com. I ordered a shirt, shipping was super fast.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
Jason Hunt here, inviting you to join me and Timothy Harvey as we engage in polite conversation about random topics throughout the genre. Now, you never know just what we'll talk about next, and you can bet whatever it is, we'll have an opinion. And we're usually right, and we're sometimes brilliant. H2O, just one of the many podcasts as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, which you can find on iTunes, Double Twist, OneCast, or the RSS feed over at scififorme.com. Your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
The fall TV season is upon us, and you know what that means. Recaps. Join us over at scififorme.com as we dive into new shows and new seasons with our unique blend of dry facts and colorful opinions. We talk about the shows and share our analysis, and you're more than welcome to join the conversation. Fall TV is on. Only at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio. It's better than goofy golf.
We are vengeance. We are the night. We are Sci-Fi for Me.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us again on our discussion of the DC Comics television universe. And welcome again to all of our Rogues Gallery. Tim Harvey.
Hello.
Jason Hunt.
Yeah.
Jeff Hackworth.
Howdy.
And Christopher Pryor.
Hello.
And myself, Christopher Jensen. One of the things I wanted to tie in and connect to our discussion in the first half of the Gotham television show is that I had an opportunity, thanks to some of our contacts or Sci-Fi for Me, to join a conference call last week with the Gotham Universe's Penguin himself, Robin Lord Taylor. It was a fairly short call about 30 minutes, and while I had fretted over a bunch of questions to ask, I ultimately did not get to ask anything, but everything was covered on it, so everything worked out pretty well. It was an interesting call. A lot of good questions brought out about Penguin's character and Gordon and Penguin's relationship throughout the season. Obviously, Robin couldn't be very specific about certain, you know, plot things, so it didn't spoil anything in process. But he has a very interesting perspective on two fronts. One, on the actual character's growth and transformation of how Penguin is going to evolve into this crime lord, but also struggle to maintain his power and his confidence, you know, in that act. And then how he's going to build the relationship with Jim, and that it's becoming this sort of yin and yang relationship where they both sort of hate and respect each other and grow through that process. And one kind of interesting small tidbit that I thought was interesting that I noticed also in a interview with Gordon was that Penguin as well, Robin referenced the fact that with no slip of the tongue or anything, clearly called Jerome Joker. And that I thought was particularly interesting, you know, whether it was a Freudian slip or not, but it didn't seem like it to me that they were actually themselves internally referring to him as Joker. So yeah. Any guys have thoughts on this?
Well, I think Bruno Heller has come out and said that the Joker, I mean, they're acknowledging that Jerome is the Joker. Maybe not the Joker, but a Joker. But right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think internally they've all sat there and acknowledged that he's the Joker. I mean, he's the proto Joker.
Just everything but name, he's basically the Joker.
Yeah.
Which is dumb.
Well, it's hardly as interesting a backstory as they could have given him. They could have done something a bit more creative, I feel. But
yeah, pretty domestic, pretty basic. Yeah.
Well, I like the idea of the I like the idea of the Joker's origin being multiple choice.
Me too.
In The Killing Joke, he's like, I remember it differently every single time.
Yeah.
You know, and we shouldn't get locked into an origin for that character because we don't know who he is, and that's what makes him work so much, mm-hmm. so well.
Well, his premiere episode right at the end there, he just starts going straight up Heath Ledger. So he's supposed to be the Joker.
Well, I see yeah. Ledger. I see Nicholson.
Nicholson for sure.
A lot of Nicholson in the face. The face.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a little bit of Cesar Romero.
There's a touch for sure.
I can just see a little, that.
Yeah. So.
From the acting standpoint, too, Taylor had an interesting little bit. You know, I have felt that both Taylor's performance as Penguin and Corey Smith as Edward Nigma have been some of the highlights of the villains of the show so far.
They've been great.
And that is mirrored in Taylor's discussion in this conference call that he loves just sitting back and watching Corey Smith's performance as Nigma and how it's evolving. And he seems really excited for where it's going to go this season.
And then they recruit Catwoman and try to take over the United Nations. That's not this movie.
Exactly.
Not this one.
Right. They dehydrate everybody.
That's right. Everybody's got a mother. Yes. That's the one line that I remember about that. Every one of them has a mother.
But that was what I got from the conference call. So,
now did any time address the tone of the show and you know the fact that it's so much grim, dark, and you know it's you know very much influenced by Nolan and
Snyder.
And Burton and Snyder and that group? Or have they talked about any particular approach to that? Was that in there?
No, it was really all focused towards Robin's character and characters he interacts with on the show. They talked a little bit about Butch and about the programming and stuff and what Robin thought was going to be the result of his sidekick Butch's mental program from Zaz to determine is that going to hold solid through the season or will it be trouble there? And he felt like that he's going to have to watch, you know, like Butch a lot. In the coming season.
No. Well, speaking of tone, let's try. I know we had a plan coming up into part two, but I'm going to change the plan. We have a rumor from a couple of different places. I think Heroic Hollywood is one of these sources that Chris Jensen tracked down here. There are going to be possibly two teasers for Batman 5 Superman coming up. One of them will be in Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
The other one will be in Supergirl. Now, the kicker on these, according to the rumor, the teaser that's going to run in Gotham is going to be focused on Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a Batman movie. And the teaser that runs in Supergirl is going to focus on Kal-El. Because it's a Batman movie with Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to backfire spectacularly.
Yeah.
Running the Batman teaser in Gotham, not so much. That's going to be perfectly fine because the tone of the show matches the tone of the movie.
Yeah. Dark, gritty, and exactly. Everything's dirty.
Darkness, no parents. That's that world.
Yeah.
That's fine. When you run a Batman 5 Superman spot in the middle of Supergirl...
That messes with the tone.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be such a disconnect because people are going to be watching Supergirl because it fits. You know, I've said it before. You could put Christopher Reeve in costume on that show and it would be perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that show feels mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
And you're going to do, hey, while you're enjoying the good one, here's a teaser for the other one.
The world and then, is dark and then
back to the show that you like.
Superman,
it makes a certain amount of sense.
Those trailers, you know, to try to focus directly on just Superman, for example,
mm-hmm.
from what we've seen in trailers already, they're pushing way into like giving too much information. Because if they tighten it down just to Superman, one, the tone is going to be wrong. But they're going to start telling us things that we don't really want to know yet. Just like, you know, Christopher was saying earlier, you know, actually off air, was that, you know, let me see the movie. You know, stop sending me trailers. Like, we only got a couple months. Let's just button it up and get there.
Well, and speaking of trailers, in addition to that, it looks like we're going to get an official trailer in the theaters in front of Creed Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Which actually times out about right.
Yeah.
But sure, put Batman versus Superman in front of a boxing movie. Because, you know.
That'll boost sales for Creed.
It's Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. It's Batman punching Superman. It makes perfect sense to put it in front of Creed. Right?
I still think the people that are going to go see Batman V5 are going to go see it. You know, they don't need another trailer.
I think I want, you know, because from what we've seen, it seems like in the Batman v Superman, it seems like Batman's been out of the game for a while. Looks like he's coming back. I really want to see him try to get back into shape by having Rocky Balboa show up and say, okay, I'm going to get you back into shape for a while.
Training montage.
Yeah.
You got to have that, right?
Man, you know, he's like a Superman, so if he puts you down, you got to keep getting back up again and again.
He'll knock you tomorrow. This guy will kill you to death inside of 3 rounds.
We'll just play Eye of the Tiger.
make sure you get the rights for it first, because.
It really does feel like the guys on the TV side of things are recognizing that fans are tired of the dark, and it's, you know, Gotham notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at everything else that's on, for the most part, you look at all of the Marvel stuff, you look at all the stuff that Greg Berlanti and his crew are putting together, it's all much lighter than the Snyderverse.
Well,
Nolan stuff.
DC's always been better when it comes to TV than it is to their movies. They're in the cartoon shows or their live action stuff. It's always been it's easier to go lighter in nature with their stuff because their heroes are a lot more idealized than Marvel's heroes are, who are designed to be more down to earth and relatable.
And the irony is that Marvel's stuff feels more like DC Comics. I mean, it feels more like comic book stuff. And I've said this before. Marvel's making comic book movies. Warner Brothers is making movies based on comic books. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference between those two.
Yeah.
But if you look at the TV stuff, I mean, even Arrow.
Yeah.
You know, they're moving Arrow away from the dark. They're going to be lighter this season. Season 4 is going to be Green Arrow. And there's going to be more... with the metahumans and Hive, and you know, they're embracing powers on Arrow a little bit more now. Flash is going to be the big place.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when Legends of Tomorrow comes in, then you've got time travel.
Yeah, we've already got the Adam suit has already been introduced.
Yep.
That's already a thing.
And then we have
Lazarus Pitts. You have Lazarus Pitts.
And then Constantine.
He's going to resurrect Sarah. Back.
Yeah. So that's bringing magic in.
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time before Zatanna shows up.
That's going to be fun. Yep.
Yes.
And let's see if Gardner Fox gets a credit for her.
I expect that he will. And it's funny because when Tim and I were working over the weekend on this MTV thing, I was scrolling through Instagram to see what was going on. And I ran across a picture that Selma Hayek had posted from wherever she was. And I was going so fast, I didn't recognize what any of it was, but it looked like, oh, a Zatanna cosplay. And I flipped back and it was, oh, no, this is Salma and whatever. But now I want to see Salma Hayek cosplaying as Zatanna. Because it would work. Just because.
I just want to see you with those leggings.
It's Salma Hayek. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Why would we not want to see Salma Hayek?
That's right. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. Whether or not the rest of the magical characters start showing up. And Arrow now will probably be the best place for them because Flash is the science side, the technical stuff. And now you've got Vixen on the animated side over on CW Seed. Mm-hmm. You have magic there. You have Constantine coming in, so you've got magic on that episode with the Lazarus Pits. I think, I don't know, I think maybe by the end of season 4 on Arrow, maybe we'll have some more magic. What do you think?
I'm
you mean like the Shade, the Changing Man, and all that?
Well, I think if you can build enough of that world on the television show, that, I mean, there's, because we've had shows like Supernatural and you know, all sorts of other shows with magic in them on and those little elements of horror for quite a while. And so we know there's a market for it. And it could be a good way to start pulling some of this darker stuff into... And a lot of the magic stuff is darker stuff. This is the darker stuff you could pull into things like Arrow and The Flash and use them as... You know, the big event things where they're, because, you know, The Flash is always going to have a lighthearted tone, but it went to some very dark places in the first season, just by the nature of the story.
Mm-hmm. It did.
Arrow is darker, and I'm going to reserve judgment on how light a tone they say they're going to.
Oh, it won't be as light as Flash.
No.
No.
Because they said they're going for a lighter tone, but that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, they got a lot of wiggle room there.
Right. So
they're still going to be shooting people with bows and arrows.
Right. But you could end up with bringing in some of these magic characters and expanding on some of the magic in Arrow takes you into some of the more horror based aspects of the DC universe.
Right.
And that's a very rich, very rarely mined. Territory for the cinematic side of DC, and you know, if you do it right, you could maybe, and I, you know, fingers crossed, in a perfect world, haha, this will never happen. But you could get a Constantine show back, or a show like that. You could get a Spectre, or
Swamp Thing.
You know. So the problem with Swamp Thing is that I would love to see a well-made. I would love to see a very good Alan Moore version of the Swamp Thing in either film or television, but the effects budget is just going to be through the roof.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
They had a good animated short about the Spectre It was before one of the animated films, or it was an extra.
Yeah, it was a DC Showcase.
Yeah.
Well, and they just the current version of the Spectre, they just completely ripped out. They just pulled the rug out from underneath everybody reading the comic. So there's some very interesting places they could take it. I don't know if you guys have heard that, but the of course the Spectre is the spirit of vengeance, the God's wrath.
That could be our Green Lantern tie-in.
Well, the various hosts of the Spectre have been merely the human host for this power. Well, in the current, most recent issue of the Spectre, I think it's the final issue of this. Might be the final issue. I think that comic's going away. Basically, it's like, no, it's always been you. It's never been God. It's been you.
Yeah.
And it's but you have this very rich. I mean, you got Etrigan the Demon. You've got Jason Blood. You've got all these different places you could take things. And if you're thinking about building a TV universe, and you've got Flash and you've got Arrow, then maybe they're thinking about branching out into having a more magic horror-ish show. Because they could do it.
Well, and the other thing...
They couldn't do Constantine over on network, but they're on cable now.
Well, the other thing, too...
Supernatural can't go forever.
No, Supernatural won't go forever, but now with Vixen on Seed, you could do an animated... You could take all of the magic stuff and do them as animated pieces. So you could have, Matt Ryan as Constantine on Seed, and you could have a Swamp Thing, and you can have Intrigan, and all of that. And maybe we get Justice League Dark... on CW Seed. Watching Vixen, the one thing that irritates me about that is they're doing 5-minute segments. I'd much rather see them do 10 minutes, 15 minutes, not 5, because there's not enough time to do anything. They get started and they stop.
Mm-hmm.
Get started and they stop. It's almost like you have to binge watch the whole thing just to really be able to follow it, because from week to week, it's 5 minutes. You can't retain it because there's not enough there.
Well, but they're falling guilty to the never been true, never going to be true. People only want to watch 5 minutes, or they don't want to, they don't want to watch anything on length online, and that has hasn't been true since videos hit the online world. But it's the common perception. It's the common, everybody seems to think they decided this is true, even though it's blatantly not.
It sounds like nobody listens to podcasts longer than 20 minutes.
Exactly.
Right.
With the introduction of all this magic into the universe, we've already seen things like, honestly, I think excessive use of resurrection, especially in Arrow. Where do you guys think the limit is? I mean, if they continue to add in, with Constantine arriving, all the others, is there a limit when we're getting too close to, say, like Marvel's revolving door in heaven, where the magic is just going to defeat all of the, basic storytelling devices to tell a good story?
That's a good question. I think, just for me... as long as the story is well told, then they'll be okay. I don't know that you can really. I mean, there how much originality is there to any of this stuff anyway? Because these,
well, it's all derivative from stuff that's already been written down.
Yeah, it's stuff that we've seen before. I think that as long as it's not terribly overdone, then we ought to be okay.
Well, the magic is a means to an end when you're telling a story. You want to say, why can this character shoot fire from his hands? Because magic. Why were we able to jump from point A to point B so quickly? Because magic. Why can he fly? Why is the end of the world coming? It's just something you use, but if it becomes an excuse to get out of writing yourself into a corner, that's as soon as we start saying, oh, come on, because you're not telling a story anymore. You're just trying to get out of doing a bad job. When it becomes a crutch, it becomes obnoxious. When it's when it's still used to do something interesting and it doesn't distract from the characters and the story, we don't notice it.
And I think given the fact that people are already wanting to see Constantine in more than one episode, I don't think we've hit that threshold point yet where people are tired of seeing it. I think there's a lot more room for expansion into that side of the DC universe because, you know, like Tim was saying, we still haven't seen Intrigan, Jason Blood, you've got the whole Warlord story, you know, the world inside the world and those kind of things, you know, King Arthur and Camelot and all sorts of different aspects of the magical world that haven't even been hinted at yet. So I think there's a lot of room there. And maybe we'll get a little bit of that in Legends of Tomorrow because now that Flash has given us the multiverse and Legends of Tomorrow is going to give us time travel, then maybe we get parallel dimensions where they can play with some of that stuff that's there for an episode and gone.
I agree with all of that on those points, and I'm definitely looking forward to Constantine joining the show. Loved the original series. But I'm just thinking about, like, Arrow hasn't already made these mistakes of killing drama in certain areas. You know, like the death of Sarah Lance in the very beginning was a huge deal. And it was part of the design of the show. Everybody had a secret life and stuff that she ends up not being good the first time. You know, and then she dies, and then now they're going to bring her back again. You know, in a sense, I mean, just technically, Arrow didn't die, you know, like in one of those season finales, but he kind of came back. He's on the brink of death. But, I mean, that's my only concern is that when they use the magic, like you say, as a crutch, and they're killing the drama in the story, that's where I get concerned that they might push it too far.
Honestly, the reason that Arrow has never really resonated with me incredibly, I think it's okay, but it's never been my show, has been because they have done this with characters before. They have just made you think a character is dead and it turns out they haven't. They've done this with so many characters already, it's been hard for me to take a lot of the drama seriously.
Well, Sarah Lance is the Clara Oswald of the DC television universe.
Yeah.
She is the Impossible Girl.
Yeah. And the thing that really made me just scratch my head with frustration was all the flashbacks that keep revealing all this other stuff, which negates all our previous things. Oh, I was so invested in the drama here. Turns out, hey, wasn't even real. It was a lie. It was a ruse.
Well, the flashbacks to a certain extent serve a story purpose sometimes.
They did in season one, sure, but they kept doing it season after season.
Well, they're going to do it every season. I mean, that's something that Guggenheim and the guys have said from the very beginning is that the flashbacks are part of the format for the show. So those aren't going away. We can only hope that
they get better at it.
They get better. Well, because season three was so rocky. Season three was, you know, it had its good moments, but there was plenty of it that people were looking sideways at the show, going, "Really? That's what you're going to do?"
Mm-hmm.
And Tim and I have talked about it. Tim's not too thrilled with the whole treatment of Ra's al Ghul, and how that goes, but.
Well, it was around season three. Was that sort of like when the Arrowverse, all these other spinoffs were starting to originate around that time? Flash was getting some traction there, and they were starting to build the connections.
Flash season one and Arrow season three both ran at the same time, but Flash came out of the gate fully formed.
Yes,
I mean it really did. Pardon the pun. Hit the ground running and just didn't stop. It was pretty well put together. The only major problem with Flash throughout the entire season was the treatment of Iris. Mm-hmm. Was this whole how could she not know when everybody else in the city knows? You know, that kind of thing. And now that she knows and she's an active part of the team, I think that problem has been alleviated.
Do you think with this formation of multiple shows all spinning off of Arrow, do you think that had a strain on the development of that season?
I don't think so. Not me personally. I don't know what anybody else thinks.
I think there's definitely room to, you know, certainly look in that direction. I mean, there was a lot of development, a lot of characters to be building and structuring.
when you have a show in its infancy like Arrow, I mean, only two seasons in, you know, you still got a lot to work on.
I think part of the challenge for season three was making Ted Kord Ray Palmer. I think there was going into the season, because, you know, everybody has looked at that, and we've talked about it a number of times, the fact that, you know, everybody assumes, the speculation is that Ray Palmer was originally supposed to be Ted Kord. And come to find out, I don't know if you guys saw this or not.
Booster Gold and
there's
Blue
Beetle. There's a Blue and Gold movie in development.
Yeah, they're still trying to do that.
Well, this is a new thing, because, you know, for a while we heard that Jeff Johns was working on Booster Gold with Sci-Fi. This is a new thing that just hit, I think, this.
This was like a few days ago.
Yeah. It was like early last week.
The biggest issue on
that particular development story is that the question that's being asked is, can it fit into the DC cinematic? Because they want all this grim dark. And you know, basically, that show is going to be filled with humor, you know, in its design. It almost has to be. So can they get away with producing a movie that's separate, almost like a sub-universe, effectively?
Yes. First of all, okay,
kind
again,
of like a Guardians.
Okay, we have one DC movie. Everyone's like, it's the whole universe. One movie, guys. And
they've already brought out their slate, though. They said they're going to clear for the next 10 years.
Sure, but that doesn't mean it's all going to be the same tone.
True.
Everyone is making this ridiculously dumb assumption.
What about the announcement from the actual CEO of the company?
Well, have you seen Aquaman?
Well, okay, if you're rolling out a Booster Gold movie, you are not going to make it a grim, dark film. It's impossible. It can't be done.
Well, and the word is, this is an article on the tracking board is where this first broke, the word is that it's going to be buddy cop type format between Ted Kord and Booster, the Ted Kord Blue Beetle. It's Justice League International, JLI, you know, Blue and Gold, and Greg Berlanti is developing it. So right from the get-go, this really feels like maybe Warner Brothers is sitting there going, you know, those guys over at the TV division, they kind of doing pretty well. Maybe we should, hedge our bets.
It's all an assumption, you know, that this proposed cinematic universe, it wasn't going to be sans humor. I mean, they made that statement straight out. So I mean, if they're backpedaling, great. But it's not an assumption. I mean, they said so. That's, I think, the reason why there's any kind of controversy.
They didn't say there was not going to be any humor, because
tone would be darker.
Well, sure. You can have a darker tone and still have films that aren't grimdark.
Right.
Right.
Suicide Squad is, well, first of all, Suicide Squad actually fits the grimdark mold. It always has.
Yeah, because it's about villains.
Yeah.
If you go back to the original comic strip, it's, I think, in the first, it might have been the first or second issue, Amanda Waller blows a guy's head off, literally.
She did that in the animated piece, too. Assault on Arkham. So, that's a common thing.
Because that's the point. You have to establish that you're... your villains are disposable, so there's any kind of sense of threat.
Right.
The idea that based on one movie, and you can never trust what a studio says anyway, ever. No studio ever talking about the kind of films they have. If the films aren't out yet and they haven't got the box office, a studio will pivot on a pinhead in a second if they can see a better way to make money.
That's
right. So basing the grimdark world off one movie and some trailers, what DC is going to be putting out for the next 10, 15 years is, it's just not, it's not going to be that way. I mean, they're gonna find what's going to work, and they're gonna, if it doesn't work, you know, they spent so much money on Superman Returns, and the film made money.
Yeah.
And then they pivoted away because it didn't make the kind of money they wanted it to make.
Right.
It also wasn't good.
It's about half a good movie.
Well, okay.
It's a really, and I've said this before, it's a really, really expensive fan film. And it's done really well. The two problems that I have, yeah, it's pretty. That's Mr. Harvey being, yeah. Okay, so the two problems I have with it was the casting of Lois Lane. I thought that was a terrible decision, poor choice. And the kid.
Mm. Yeah. Just like everything kid?
Everything kid. Mm. You know, this idea that Superman had a kid out of wedlock just goes completely against everything that the character has stood for since 1938.
It's not just that it's out of wedlock, it's that does she even remember it happening? It's never clear whether she actually remembers the event. Because if we're going off the Christopher Reeves movies, he erased her memory.
Right, he erased her memory. Well, he did that at the end of Superman 2, but of course she actually does remember in 3, which Superman Returns kind of skips. So, you know, there's still that question back and forth. But I think...
Well, the thing is, if she doesn't remember, then that raises some really uncomfortable ideas. I mean, about
well,
what
the whole thing
is.
The whole thing about Superman having a kid just goes against the traditional expectations for that character.
How is the DNA even compatible?
Magic.
There we go.
I don't know. It's compatible with Lexus to make Superboy, and we never question that.
Yes, but that's in a lab. That's true. That's manipulation. You can manipulate the DNA on that part.
The kid is in a womb.
I don't know. But yeah, I think Superman Returns...
Superboy was in a test tube.
Superman Returns was a good attempt at the beginning of a DC universe. Green Lantern... Green Lantern was a good attempt at telling... It was a good attempt at a movie. It was a terrible execution because it tried to do three. It tried to tell three movies at once. That's where it went wrong. And I got to give props to Ryan Reynolds for coming out and saying I'd do it again, because at the time that was the decision that everybody thought was the best way to do it. And you know, so okay, it didn't work, but. We didn't know going into it that it wasn't going to work.
On paper, no, it sounds pretty good. Ryan Reynolds is an entertaining actor. Green Lantern had a lot of fans behind it. It's a fun idea to work with. You can take it in a lot of different directions. Yeah. Sounds great on paper.
I think to Tim's point, though, they can pivot. They can decide that they're not going to do another one in this group. The only thing is, you know, we've got all of these films that have already been announced, and you've got Wonder Woman's starting to shoot now, Suicide Squad's in post. What are they shooting after that? Are they going into a Batman, or are they doing Justice League? They're doing Justice League next, right?
Next.
Aquaman's next?
That's in development. They were gonna make another Superman movie, but that's basically...
Snyder's basically come out and said that Batman V Superman is essentially Man of Steel 2.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get a proper Superman movie
out of
this universe.
Happen.
Which is kind of sad.
Well, because no one from this creative team likes Superman. They don't like him.
Warner Brothers doesn't like Superman.
No.
I don't like Superman.
Why don't you like Superman?
In some ways that he's written, he's overpowerful, and he comes off cocky.
Well, you can say that for just about any superhero.
When has Superman ever been cocky? Are you talking about New 52 Superman? Because I haven't read any of that. Or Grant Morrison Superman? When has he ever been cocky?
I was thinking more like animated Superman was. I mean, it was good. Don't get me wrong. But, like, sometimes when I read the comics, he comes off overpowerful. And cocky about his powers.
Well, but that's now, just me. Now, prior to Crisis on Infinite Earths, a lot of people were making that argument. And you could you could strongly make that argument and have a case that Superman had way too much power and was way too invulnerable, because pretty much the only thing that would get him was kryptonite or magic.
Yeah.
And he, you know, they just kept adding powers and skill sets and, oh, he can do this, and, oh, he can do this, and, oh, what? I didn't know he could do that. But once you get past Crisis and you get the John Byrne reboot, Man of Steel, the six-issue thing, that really stripped away a lot of that overpower aspect to the character. And you actually saw, and I've got several years worth of the run past that, there's a lot of places where you see him straining. You know, he's not super strong and can just do anything, you know, Ben Steel with his bare hands, but moving a building is still going to be an effort for him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so they did draw down a lot.
There's long been an idea, and we've heard it's not a recent thing, where people don't necessarily find Superman to be as interesting because in many ways he's meant to be something akin to perfect.
Well, right. He is the Superman. He's the old man.
Yeah. Right. But so I will
It is less interesting to write for a character like that than it is to write for a Peter Parker or a Bruce Wayne or a Barry Allen.
I'm seeing less and less the appeal of a Bruce Wayne.
I am more satisfied with some of the other writing of Superman, like Red Sun or Flashpoint and stuff like that. But, I mean, those are Elseworlds stories.
Yeah, you're talking about alternate versions.
New 52, he's pretty good.
See, I don't like New 52 Superman.
I like almost nothing New 52. I liked New 52 Animal Man. That's about it.
You know, a lot of people like that one.
It was good. It was really good.
And what was the other one that really took off at the beginning? It may have been a Swamp Thing title.
DC got their horror lines right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They did a really, really good job with the horror lines, and I'm kind of surprised that they were as good as they were. I was happy that they were, but it was for something that was as erratic at best handled across the rest of the line. The horror stuff was surprisingly consistent and well done. Wonder Woman's been pretty decent from a lot of accounts. Not perfect, but pretty decent. Aquaman's been pretty good from a lot of accounts.
Well, and Batman didn't really change much, so that one has sold consistently well. You know, I just had a thought. I know how they can make Booster Gold and Blue Beetle within the confines of the Snyderverse.
Okay.
It's the same way they're doing with Captain Marvel. You make it a new line instead of Warner Brothers. You know, New Line Cinema makes the movie instead of Warner Brothers Pictures, because that's what they're doing with Captain Marvel.
Really?
Or as they call them now, Shazam.
I thought you were thinking the Marvel's Captain Marvel.
No, I'm talking about the original Captain Marvel.
That one.
The real Captain Marvel.
That, yeah.
Because that is going to be, yes, it's still part of the overall DC cinematic universe, at least as far as it is now. But it's going to get a smaller budget, and it's going to be done under the New Line banner instead of the Warner Brothers banner. And I think that's going to give them a little bit more leeway, because Captain Marvel and Shazam, that's magic. And if you bring in the buddy cop aspects of Blue and Gold, I think that would fit the sensibilities of New Line. And then Warner Brothers isn't putting their name on it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's my theory, anyway.
Interesting. Very interesting. How did we get here?
loopholes. The long and winding road. All right. Anyway, yes. Okay, so what's next? The end of the show. That's what's next.
Okay.
All right. So we've pretty much talked everything to death at this point. But coming up on our next outing, And the next time we all sit down, Arrow will be back, Flash will be back. Now, the chicks, Heather and Alex, will be doing a podcast talking about iZombie when that show returns. So that's coming forward, and Chris Jensen will continue to write recaps for Gotham. And mm-hmm. I think, Chris, you're also taking Flash, is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing Flash.
Okay, and I got to look up and see who's doing Arrow. I can't remember who's writing the Arrow recaps this year because I'm not going to be doing it. And then also, if you've got any interest at all in the Marvel Universe, we do have a podcast for that. It's called Level 117. That's back for a full season with the return of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the 29th, which is this week. And that'll be an episode that we record immediately following every new episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. So you can check that out as well. You can join us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr. And you can always leave us a message. You can send an email to roguesgallery@scififorme.com. Or you can call our hotline. It's 573-42-SCIFI. And you can leave a comment there. You can leave a comment on our main site, which is scififorme.com. It's where you can find all of the latest news and reviews and interviews and all sorts of good stuff there. That's going to do it for us. Jason Hutt here, along with everyone on the staff. Want to thank all our participants here. Chris Pryor in the studio.
Hello. Goodbye.
Chris Jensen.
Thanks for listening.
Jeffrey Hackworth.
Good night, y'all.
And Timothy Harvey.
Thanks for listening, guys.
And we will be back with another episode of Rogues Gallery in 2 weeks' time.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.